Okay, a couple things here. When you think about kids, children are mentioned. You see at the top of the reference sheet, you see that there are more than 500 references to children in the Bible. Now, you might not expect that, but they are important for a lot of reasons. God also says that they're important. So about half of those 500 references are going to be literal. So you could study kids from a literal perspective, or you could study them from a figurative perspective. Tonight, I've got about five basic areas that we want to cover and try to cover both. But like I say, this is an area where you could spend a lot of time. In fact, probably at least 6 months just on children. When you look at our society, kids are a big part of our society, and you find both extremes. When you think about the royals, anybody see any news about that as far as babies come into the world and, you know, are we going to have a boy or are we going to have a girl and what's the baby's name going to be? So people around the world pay attention to that kind of thing. And then at the opposite end, you find, for example, the school shooting that we just had, the most recent one out in Colorado. And all the attention there is focused on the children. And that's good, that's right. But think about the trauma that they're going to experience and how are we going to keep our children safe in a school or in another place. And then you can look at it from a more general perspective. We have special places for children. We have museums and sometimes there's special schools, different functions sometimes in a community. So kids play a big part in our society, but that's always been true. They've always been really important. And I think that really is recognized in the Bible. When you think about kids in Scripture, if they are referred to hundreds of times, you would expect that children are probably going to be described at various stages in life, and that's true. You can go from, for example, in the book of Job, I think I included that one, Job chapter 3 and verse 16, Job describes infants. If you were to look back at that passage, Job talks about some children that do not make it out of the womb. So when you think about Scripture, the Bible does recognize the unborn, that are not born for whatever reason. You also find that you have some references to children as far as being in the womb, and they are successfully brought into the world. And then you have a weaned child, Psalm 131, verse 2. So kids, virtually every age that you can think of is somehow reflected, I think, in Scripture. Characteristics of children. That's really where we want to begin as far as our main point. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11 is a passage which shouldn't be new to us. But let's take a look at that and think about it in terms tonight, not of spiritual gifts, which is what Paul originally gave that information for, but look at it from the perspective of children. Anybody there and want to read? All right, Sherman?
When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things.
Okay, let's go and look at the descriptions there. What's the first one? Paul said, I spoke as a child. What comes to mind when you think about a child speaking as a child?
Silly.
All right, sometimes it's silly. There's the goofiness. What else? Speaking as a child.
They probably don't know as much as they will later in life, so basically.
Okay. Simplistic ideas when you think about a child communicating. You might ask for what happened, and they would say, well, a car caused that damage. But if you were to ask an adult, what would the adult say? A half-ton pickup. Well, we have more precise communication, hopefully later on in life, but with a child, you know, well, a car describes a lot of different things. What else when you think about speaking as a child? Yeah, they're still in that stage where they're very, it's an exploratory stage in life. They're still trying to investigate and understand, so sometimes that ability to question, that probing, is lost later in life. We become sort of focused on the mundane sometimes, and that quizzical nature just disappears. Anything else? Speaking as a child. Don?
Would you put in focus to me what age you would refer to as a child? Because it is ships. Early children?
Well, let's take your question and make a question out of it.
Right.
When we think about someone today no longer speaking as a child, roughly how old is that person?
It could be 5, 6, 7 years old.
Well, you're beginning to lose some of the babyishness, but really before you start talking as an adult.
14. teen enough too. I mean, they're still children.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're thinking about someone, you know, hopefully by the age of 18 or 21, they have been able to put away most of the childish speech. But by that time, our law is beginning to look at them as an adult. If you commit a crime, you might be waived into adult court, but more than likely, at the age of 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, they're going to treat you as an adult if you commit a crime. So the idea there is you have reached the point of maturity where you're now accountable. So 14 would seem to me to be a little on the childish side more on the more on the adult side.
In the U.S., we consider under 18 to be a juvenile child, over 18 to be an adult.
Well, our law generally, I think, looks at that. You could have some states where that varies, but I think that that's generally how it goes. But you may have a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old, maybe because it's so carefully premeditated that they're waived into the adult court system. At the age of 12, I believe, it was when they started to teach them a trade. So they were starting to think that you need to start putting away the childish things. We're going to teach you how to do something and make something in your life. So there needs to be that progression. But by the time you become an adult, and that's, as we know, I think going to vary from person to person, they are expecting different behavior from you. Glenda, did you have a hand or were you? Okay, that's okay. All right, what's the second item there? Spoke as a child, and I understand as a child. When you're dealing with a child, what's the understanding like?
How everything relates to them.
Well, all right, it's going to be self-centered. Anything else?
You have to use simple language.
All right, it's going to have to be simple. They're not ready for complex math. They're not ready for, complicated sentences, those kinds of things. You're going to have to really break it down. And then we also had complication, or we also had a child as far as a child in thought. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 11. All right. Tied in with that, we go back to 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 3. Anybody there? Ready to go? 2 Kings 5. All right, Lois, first three verses, if you will. Okay, we don't know how old this little girl was, but that's how some translations will describe her, a little girl. When you think about a little girl, age-wise, what comes to mind?
6 or 7.
All right. Let's put that on the lower end. Higher end would be what?
10 or 12.
All right, 10 or 12. So 6 to 12 is roughly that age bracket. Now, if you are a child between 6 and 12, you've been taken from your homeland, taken from mom and dad, brought to a new place. And in the new place, you know, you understand that the people that are keeping you or you're staying with, that they really didn't have anything to do with your being snatched from here. They're the people that are now going to care for you. Maybe they paid some money for you, and you're treated reasonably well. There are certainly going to be exceptions to this, but generally speaking, what do you think is going to happen to that 6 to 12-year-old person? Oh, all right, they say, well, okay, you know, that wasn't fun losing mom and dad, and I lost my friends, but this is my new set of circumstances, and I can adjust. Now, there are probably going to be some kids that would rebel, and they would not do very well. So we ask this question, what was the attitude of this little girl? She trying to burn the house down? She's trying to help them out. And she could have kept this knowledge to herself, or she could have been misbehaving, but everything that's said about her is that she wants to assist the people who are now caring for her. Hey, you know, you're sort of my makeshift dad. Apparently she had enough regard for the man to say, you need to go here. And thankful he did. Point D. Genesis 25 and verse 27. When you think about kids and characteristics, anybody ready to go? Julie, I think I saw you first. Betty, if you get that next reference, that would be helpful.
So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents.
Okay. What's true for the boys as far as they were similar or dissimilar?
Dissimilar.
All right. One likes to be where? All right, he likes to be outside. He's the rugged one. You know, let's go out and get a bear or a lion or whatever that might be. And the other one, where's he like to be?
Inside.
All right, he's going to help out in the kitchen or something else. So when you think about kids today, especially parents, new parents that come along, they have their first baby, little time goes by, and they're thinking, okay, we're going to have a second child. And maybe that by that time they're still fairly young, and they're thinking, well, we've kind of figured things out with the first one, so we've gone down the road once, so what's going to be true this time? Yeah, it's going to be easier, and we're just going to go down this same road, and it's going to be a repeat of time number one. Well, what do most parents find? It's kind of like Genesis chapter 25 and verse 27. The first one goes this way, and maybe it's really easy, maybe it's really hard. The second one likely goes the other way. So if it was easy the first time around, hard this time around, easy the second time around. So one of the strange characteristics of kids is exactly what you find very early in the book of Genesis. Anything that you want to add or ask before we move down to our reference from 1 Kings chapter 1 Kings chapter 15 and verse 3. Betty, you there? 1 Kings 15, 3.
He walked in all the sin of his father, which he had done before him, and his heart was not perfect with the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father.
What did he do? He walked what? In the
sins
of his father. What does that tell you as far as children and one of the characteristics they have? They imitate people, especially parents. Now, parents sometimes say, well, don't do as I'm doing. I'm going to do this. You live in a different way because what I'm doing is probably not the best choice for you. Well, we see typically how that works out. Kids, where do they start the imitation process? Well, probably with a little boy, a little girl next door. They're over at the neighbor's house. They see it. It looks fun. Or they see it on TV. Maybe with our electronic culture, they see it on the web somehow. And then they think, that looks fun. I'm going to imitate that behavior. Well, that becomes a problem because if you have a culture which becomes more and more removed from God and the kids become worse and worse than with children and that desire to imitate what they see, guess what's going to happen? I mean, it just starts moving down and down and down as far as the age. And before we had some adults that were bad behavior, you move that into the 20s and you move that into the teens and then you move that into the lower teens. And then finally, you get 4, 5, 6-year-old kids and it's not just some bad behavior, but it's really bad behavior. And we're seeing that as a culture. Anything, Glenda?
Was this David's grandson? He named his grandson?
Let's go back and take a look at that. 1 Kings 15:3. When it comes to relatives, I always have to really work on that. No, Jeroboam would have been in the northern Israel. It was Rehoboam that was in the south. So if it would have been a descendant of Rehoboam, it would have been David's family. Okay, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. Julie?
Flee also.
Thank you. Now, if that passage were just stripped out of its context and you didn't do any studying, immediately you think what? Oh, the youthful lusts are? Tick them off. Youthful lusts. Dancing,
sex.
Drinking, drugs, smoking, sex, all those kinds of things. And that's typically what we associate things with. In Illinois, came back yesterday, went down Monday to kind of get things arranged with Teresa and her mom, and then came back yesterday, and my hair was just so shaggy, it was driving me nuts. And the lady that normally cuts it, last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I said, I am desperate for an appointment. I said, you call, and I will be there. I told Teresa, I said, if she calls, it doesn't matter when it is. Just tell her I will take the appointment, and one way or the other, I will be there. Well, she didn't call Thursday, she didn't call Friday, she didn't call Saturday, and she's not open on Sunday. So, went back, and I just kind of had great clips in my head for whatever reason. I know some people have used them with great success, some others not so successful. Well, Mom had used them, and they happened to be open. And I thought, I'm just going to go in there and kind of see who is there tonight. And it turned out that there was the lady that I met. She came up. She was one of the two. And it turned out that I thought, well, I think she can cut the hair. My hair is usually kind of difficult to cut. But anyway, she did that. I was pleased, and I lost my thought. Good job, Brad.
I understand.
Yeah. Flee youthful lust. It's been a whirlwind the last 2.5 days. The idea here seems to be impulses of youth. Well, maybe I was going this direction. It doesn't sound quite right. Maybe not. Anyway, whatever that was. The meaning there is, there's the know-it-all attitude, there's the quick temper, there is the impatience of youth. You find that sometimes with young people, as they get a little older, there are going to be some changes in behavior. They would say, well, in my youth, I did this, and, oh, I remember what it was. Finally dawned on me. Hey, it still comes back, so when it doesn't come back, then I know that it's time to hang it up. So the lady that was cutting my hair was talking with the other lady who was not cutting. She was waiting on another customer. And they were talking about drugs, whether or not they had done drugs in the younger years and how people will try some things like cocaine and how attractive that is after one time and you just get hooked. And they actually kind of went on about that in a very negative way, like it's best just to leave that stuff alone. So I listened with some fascination about that conversation. And these ladies, the youngest was about 35, and that was the age she gave, and the other one, I'm guessing that she probably was 10 years past that, probably closer to 45. So they had reached the point in life where they were looking back on that behavior they said that they didn't use, and they said, well, now we can kind of see that, you know, we did some other things, but that kind of behavior is really bad. So you hope that people sometimes outgrow those kinds of things, but that's not always true. Teresa and I were at one of her high school reunions about 4 years ago, and unbelievable. You know, these people are around 50 years of age, and they still want to, the first thing that they want to do is when they enter the establishment is, you know, serve up the beers. You know, for them, life was still one big party. And you're thinking you would hopefully grow up at some point, but some people don't. But really, that's not the idea here. Those kinds of things that you have as far as some attitudes that sometimes lead to bad behavior. Anything else that you want to discuss over kids and some of their characteristics? Stan?
I think in general, children and young people are more self-centered. And it's like everything that happens or everything that's going to happen or everything that's in their mind or whatever, is how does it relate to me? Is it going to, you know, am I going to have fun with it or whatever? And I think then as people get older, their thoughts tend to go more towards their fellow man and how they can help or bring them into their circle.
Anybody ever dread in your younger years going to see a grandparent?
Dread.
Yes.
Why? Yes, now, but not then. Anybody else dread going to a grandparent's house? Well, I'm glad that that's a rarity among the group. I did. Dad always wanted to go see his mom, my grandma. And she, to me, was the most boring leader in the world. I mean, she just wanted to sit there in the chair and never do anything but just kind of talk about some of the old days. The candy was always terrible. She had, no, I'm kidding you not. It's been in there 10 years, it seemed like. She had no games to play. And it was always, you know, she was kind of down in the ghetto, so we couldn't go outside and play. And it was just sit there. you know, all prim and proper and wait until Dad was done. And I despised going to her house. I didn't dislike her, but it was kind of like what Dolores said. There were just some things there that made that completely unattractive. And
the
finally...
The attractive part was the day when she would let her hair down and would go clear to the floor and she would come back for everything else. And on Friday nights, we were there. And this would be like a week during the summer, every single summer. And on Friday nights, they had a little tiny black and white TV. And Gillette fight of the week, Friday night fights, that was her. And she was, that's the only pleasant thing that I remember about her was how she loved the fights.
Yeah, I've got some limited memories there too that are on the pleasant side. Well, when you look at that in a physical realm, as we've done, let's take that and transfer that now into the spiritual realm. As a young person, it's difficult. You know, there's some behaviors there that are hard. Two-point application. What about the young Christian who looks at some of the behaviors and some of the beliefs of an older Christian? Do you think that younger Christian is going to look and say, man, you know, you just have forgot how to have fun? You have come to the point where you're just, you know, so religious, so old. I'm never going to get that way. Well, sometimes you have the younger Christian that needs to mature into some things, and they might despise some of the older saints for those reasons, because some of the convictions that they have come to through study and through some of the things that they have witnessed. So if you're an older saint, bear in mind that you might have some younger Christians that don't look too favorably upon you. But then if you reverse that, you also have the opposite problem, don't you? What about the grandma who's sitting there and thinking, well, you young whippersnapper, you know, I'm not going to be around for too much longer, and you should enjoy your time here, and you're not. You're restless and keep asking, when can I go home? Those kinds of things. Again, look at that from the spiritual perspective. What about the older saint that looks at the younger Christian and is frustrated by some of the childish behavior? Don't you know you should be doing this, that, and the other thing? Well, maybe that younger Christian does know. Maybe the younger Christian doesn't know. So there can be great frustration on the sides of both in the spiritual realm, just as you find that in the secular realm. You think about the... Yeah, I told Beth, I said, when we have a chance to see the grandkids, I said, I don't want to be like the grandparents I had. Not that they were bad people, but they just had forgotten what some kids were like. And you might not be able to do all that a 7-year-old can do, and that's fine. But still, you can go ahead and make sure that you have some allowances there. And in the church, that's also true. All right, let's pick up with the next passage. This is going to come from the book of Psalms, Psalm 148, verses 12 through 13. Margaret? What about... Sorry, go ahead. All right, what about the old men? What are they to do? Praise God. Well, hopefully at that stage in life, they've kind of figured things out and they're willing to do that. But along with the old men, who else is listed in that psalm? Children. Very early in life, they need to be taught about worship. And it's not about just coming and running around with your friends. It's not just coming and having a good Bible class. It is praising God. That's something that you can do. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1. Remember God from when? From the days of your youth. The old days, the later period in life, it's going to come, and you need to see if you can develop good spiritual habits early in life. Proverbs 1:8, and then Colossians 3 and verse 20. Sherman, you at Proverbs 1:8? Okay. Any? Yes. All right. No. Okay. Proverbs 1 verse 8.
My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother.
Okay. This is still under the obligation that kids have. Children are to listen to who? All right, the parents. Now, that's a lesson that in our society is badly needed today. The kids, sometimes the parents don't have much to say. But parents do need to lay down the law. They do need to tell kids what's right, what's wrong, and that information needs to be followed. The Bible says children are to listen to their parents. Let's see what Paul had to say along these same lines, Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20. Dolores?
Children, always obey your parents, for this pleases the Lord.
Okay. Is it possible to listen but not obey?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you can listen all day long. I heard you. I understand. There's no question in my mind about what you said. Well, when somebody says that, you're thinking what?
You're
going to do what you heard. But there is a second aspect, and that is obedience. So listen to your parents, Proverbs 1 and verse 8, and then God says you obey what you have been told. All right, Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 22. Steve?
Listen to your father who got you, and do not despise your mother when she is old.
Ah, 2 points here. Let's start off with the easy one. Is it just mom that shouldn't be despised when she's old? All right, but dad's not mentioned. Since dad's not mentioned, surely you can despise him, right? Isn't that how some people deal with the Bible? Well, it's not mentioned, so it's okay. Here's a good passage when somebody tries to pull that next time. Say, well, you believe that it's okay to despise dad? Well, no, wait a minute. Dad's just not mentioned. Okay? Sometimes the Bible does that, whether it's salvation or in this case. All right? Why give that instruction? Don't despise mom when she's old. You go home and you visit mom when she's 50 or 60. What kind of treatment might you expect? What might mom do for you? You're coming in from out of town. She's got clean sheets in the bed. She's got your favorite food. If you like apple pie, she's baked up some apple pies. You want to go somewhere? She says, I'm ready to go. But you go home and you see mom when she's 82. Might the store be a little different?
Yeah, she's probably
a little frail. Yeah, you know, I'm not able to make the bed with clean sheets. You know, you're going to have to sleep out there on the couch.
Or make it yourself.
Or make it yourself. No more apple pies. We're going to have to go out. Or you're going to have to cook. And you're probably going to have to bring in the food as well. I'm doing lucky if I can get out of the chair. Those are some of the reasons why I think mom might be despised in the later years. And there could be some other reasons as well, but the writer said, respect your mother. Listen to them early, honor them throughout life. Thoughts, Sarah, that you want to interject? Tim?
I don't know, moms and grandmothers both, they just made so many sacrifices for their family all through the years. And it's sad to see that a lot of times it goes unappreciated.
Yeah.
It just, enough of it can bring a tear to your eye.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad.
There is that, and you can take that, I think, a step further as far as, especially in our culture, do you have some people who will steal from mom?
Yes.
I mean, they get to the point where they can't think very well, and I'm asking you to take care of the finances for me. Sure, mom, be glad to do it. Well, they just almost empty the bank account. And that's sad. But there are a lot of different ways to despise a parent. All right, so we've talked about the characteristics of kids, some of what the Bible has to say there, some of the obligations that children have. Let's now switch over to praying for kids. Genesis 17, 18. That's where we go next. Genesis. All right, Julie.
And Abraham said to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before me.
Okay, who is the child of promise for Abraham? Isaac. Who came first, Ishmael or Isaac?
Ishmael
does. So Abraham wants this son. He wants this son badly to fulfill some promises. And Ishmael shows up. And what's happening in Genesis chapter 17 and verse 18? God is being told what by Abraham? Abraham says, I've got some promises. I've got a boy. And God, let's tie them together. Well, what's God say? No. But he was still praying for his son. Two more references under this category, 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 16, David is praying for his son. This is the son, of course, that he fathered through Bathsheba. Betty?
David therefore begged God for the child, and David fasted and went in and lay all night on the earth.
All right. He's fasting. He's also praying. He's beseeching God for this child. How long does that go on? The text says all night. Maybe you've sat up with a child was sick. Maybe you've been in the hospital room with a sick child. Maybe it was something that was going on in the child's life and you literally spent the entire night, or you just lost track of the hours that you spent praying for a child. Well, then we come over to the book of Job. In Job chapter 1 and verse 5, again, it is a place where we read about praying for children, but in this case, the age of the children is significant. Job 1 verse 5. Anybody there and want to go? All right, Maxine, thanks.
When the days of feasting had completed their cycle, Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continually.
How old were Job's kids? And I'm not looking for a specific age, but... adults. All right, they're adults. And yet, even though they're adults, what's Job doing for them? Still praying for his kids every day, still mindful of them spiritually. If we're a parent, that's one of the things that we can do. Not only pray for the grandkids, if there are some that are involved, but also pray for our kids every single day. What might we pray for when it comes to our kids? Adult children. All right, I think that might be towards the top of the list, that all of their days they will remain committed to God, staying on the right path. Anything else? All right, I think that's probably going to be close to item number 2, that they're going to be safe. What else?
Their hearts.
All right, their hearts. What about the training that they're going to give to their families? Pray that they'll make the right choices, wisdom as they deal with those kids, their children. So a lot of things there that can be tied in with that. All right, correction of children. You're probably thinking, are we going to get to that? We are. Let's take a look at the book of Proverbs. We start with 13:24. Dolores?
Whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the one who loves their children is careful to discipline them.
Thank you. The first part of that, if you spare, if you do not use the rod, that would be a device that was used to correct people. In this case, you do what? You forget the discipline and you hate your child. You don't love them as you should. The world doesn't believe that. We'll talk about that more in just a minute. But society sometimes just says, well, you let him go or you let her go, and they'll figure it out later. Children need to be disciplined while there is. Proverbs 19 and verse 18. Don, did you have a hand, or are you going to read?
I'll read that in another.
Okay, 19:18.
Discipline your son while there is hope. Do not desire his death.
Okay, let me ask a question before you get to your point. While there's hope, what does that imply? All right. When would you think that's too late?
When they die.
Well, okay. I think we can all agree on that. Could we back that up a little? Could we back that up a little bit before death? Before he's 87? How long? While there's hope. What if you wait to the age of 19 and think, boy, I better discipline my son?
Yes, too late.
Too late. You don't want to let them get too far along, and obviously what Don mentioned is true as well. Glenda, we'll come back to you after we take Don's thought.
Not by the rod or the belt or any kind of punishment like that, but basically set in the corner, do this, do that, talking to them, depending on their age and things like that. Never did they take a belt to the child or a rod to the child. And Maxine and I both said, well, that kid's going to be spoiled, you know, going to have to learn all these things, but it gets up in teenagers or whatever. It didn't happen. Turned out to be very, very good kids, very, very good adults. So there's more than one way to discipline a child.
Yeah, certainly. And we don't want to. It's like some of the things. It would be like taking, going back to salvation for just a second. You have a passage which refers to faith. You don't put all the eggs in that basket. That certainly is essential. And when you think about discipline, there are a lot of different ways to discipline. One of the things about being a parent is that you try to understand your kids. There's some children that you could spank them multiple times a day, every day that they're in the house. And that's not going to change your behavior. For some kids, it doesn't work. For a high percentage of children, though, a spanking consistent with what you find in Scripture as far as discipline, and we're not talking about beating somebody, we're not talking about leaving marks on somebody. For example, when you think about some of the older days where a teacher would take a ruler and slap somebody's hands, that wasn't going to leave a mark. I guess it could if they were going to try to take out a yardstick and do something like that. But a simple 12-inch ruler, those kinds of things, you figure out what is the best course of discipline. Now, the world wants to just eliminate some of that stuff and say, well, we would never want to do anything which would lay a hand on a child. But again, that's not going to be the best course. That's also not what God said. I'm going to see if there's... and you're right. As I say, some kids, they can be spanked all day long. They turn out terrible. Other kids, they seem to get almost no discipline and they turn out fine. Those are generally not going to be what you find, I think, in the majority, but there are times where it happens.
I think it's ironic sometimes. I used to do the belt when the kids were smaller. And I always said, this is going to hurt me or it's going to hurt you. They never believed that. Never.
Yeah.
I was fooling myself away.
But society has changed a lot in a lot of different ways. And just because things were done in a certain way in the past, that didn't necessarily make them right or good. But we've kind of gone to the point where we throw out the baby with the bathwater. You have some people who went overboard, and they said, well, we would never want to spank. And just because A is wrong, that doesn't necessarily mean that B is wrong. Glenda, and then we'll take Julie's thought. Okay, it might come back. That way we'll be even if it does.
I think of discipline as disciple, which means to teach, and punishment is to punish. And if you spank without the teaching part, punishment is just
work. Sure.
And so you want to be sure to teach that you're teaching.
Yeah. Some people have actually given animals a swat. And they have found that to be an effective... Now, you're going to have some people... You're going to say that, well, that's animal cruelty. You're going to have some people who make that argument just as they would say that that's always. But, there's a difference between beating an animal
and
giving a swat, a corrective swat.
I'm going to say the rod can be different for each child because each child can take different disciplines. Stephanie, I just have to... threaten her with a switch and she'd get the shivers.
Right.
So I think the rod can be different things other than just a thing to hurt you with. It could be standing in a corner, making a child, keeping them, you don't move from there for an hour or you sit there if you read that book. But anyway, Steve's dad always said, too, he used to tell them, you break a child's will before they're 5 or 6.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I understand what he was saying. I think that maybe we would want to look at that and as far as adjust the wording a little bit, you're trying to mold or shape,
right.
Redirect, not break, because you don't want to break a child's spirit.
No.
But you do want, it's like training a tree.
Yeah.
You don't want to bust the tree in half. But you do want to make sure that if the tree is leaning in some way, you try to start pulling that back, and that can be one tool. Don?
Oh, well, there you go a little bit more. Linda was talking about you have to be careful when you read these verses like this, spare the rod, hate the child, because the rod can mean different ways of discipline. Just never lose your love for the child.
Yeah, it's a metonymy for discipline, and if you spare that. But like I say, there are some passages where you would look at that and say spanking is involved there. And today, that is one, I would use the word approve, form of discipline. But let's see if we can get some more passages here after Tim's point.
My dad worked on the New York Central Railroad out of Detroit. And he grew up in Pennsylvania. And his dad was an engineer on the Pennsylvania Railroad. And his dad worked on the railroad. So
I was exposed to a lot of train stuff, and I had a lot of electric trains, and I got really fascinated with them. And that went from toy trains to real trains. And I used to like to go, there was a railroad track about a block away from our house that my dad's train would go back and forth from Detroit to Chicago. And I used to like to go and put things on that track and watch the train smash them. And, you know, I put a penny on that track, and by the time a 200-car train ran over it, it was as thin as a piece of paper and 2 inches across, you know. I put rocks on there, it would smash them so much they would feel a talcum powder. I just got fascinated with it. Well, where my dad lived, he lived close to the railroad tracks, and he saw kids, it just seems to be with boys mostly, that they get a fascination with trains. And he actually saw some of his school chums get killed and also get their legs cut off playing around trains. And he didn't want that to happen to me, so he told me, I don't want you by the railroad tracks ever. And so he had that concern for me after seeing those things. But kids think they know everything, you know. I'm not going to get hurt. I'm just going to go do this, do that. Well, I just wasn't thinking too good, you know. He was a conductor on that train, and he controlled that train. And he come all the way out from Detroit, and I was in grass this high, and I thought it was pretty well hit there. And the train stopped. Now, that train never stops here, you know. So I just stayed hunkered down in the grass, you know. And I saw these great polished cotton pants and work boots coming through the grass. And I felt that it was him, but I was afraid to look up. But them legs stopped right in front of me, and when I looked up, there he was. And he hollers to the engineer, he says, "You hold this train here, I'll be right back." Well, he takes his pocket knife out and cuts a switch off the tree and skins it. And I got it all the way home on the back of my thighs. And he says, "Did I tell you not to play by the railroad tracks?" And I said, "Yeah, I won't do it again, Dad." He said, "Well, I know you won't." And he had me one leg and one arm up off the ground, and I never went back there. I never went back there. So the switch worked pretty good.
Yeah, with a lot of kids it will. Let's pick up, I'll give you a story related to that, but let's get our next few references in here real quick as well. So thank you. Proverbs 22, 23, and Proverbs 29. 22, 15. Anybody there? All right, Julie?
Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will draw it far from.
All right, Tim learned that. All right. The foolishness is there thinking that you can play by the train track or something else, and sometimes that spanking is going to be sufficient to do that, depending on the personality of the child. 23:13, Julie, let's hit you over the hedge over there too, and Proverbs 29:15. Who will take that one for us after Julie reads? All right, Glenda, 29:15 after Julie reads 23:13.
Sorry, I don't have it.
Okay. All right. Go. Don. Whoever has it, read.
Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with a rod, he will not die.
All right. Again, you have to look at that. We're not talking about beating someone as far as the verse. But kids might feel like they have been humiliated and shamed and, you know, they're never going to live it down if somebody sees it. But it's in part designed to shame people. And that's what discipline does. All right. 29:15.